on RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
Is it such a bad thing to look at Moonee Valley in the same light? Do we have to be racing so early in the season at Moonee Valley when it's such a great summer, autumn track?
Amazing how even a rising megastar like Russian Camelot, albeit against a very good horse, can have his fate determined by the map.
What decision is made in the current climate? Do they take the cash or do they continue with their current partner who does an outstanding job and is also a partner in racing.com?
Blaisley throughout. And was very bold in doing it and was challenged at times as well. So it was a monstrous win.
He's come off the Andrew Adkins incident. He's returned with this howler on Farnham. I just think he's in an interesting little place now, even pending what the stewards decide to do here.
Sports psychology is about elite performance. And in those clutch moments, being able to do your very best, make the right call in those quick-second decisions.
The world of the triple-place parlay has... There's a few bumps in the road have appeared.
It's that time of the week on The Verdict where we dissect and discuss it all. And what a bumper weekend of racing. It feels like it was 6 years ago that we saw Pippi win the Moyer on Friday night and Glenn Fittick race his way into Caulfield Giddy's contention after all the action at Caulfield on Saturday and the drama of Sydney's Golden Rose as well. And since then, the jockey merry-go-round, the Sydney siders coming to Victoria. Hugh Bowman rattling the cage with his quote saying, "When I grew up, I never wanted to win an Everest. I wanted to win a Melbourne Cup." It's got the Sydney siders frothing. Nature Strip trialled this morning. Geetra trialled this morning. That's Stuart Mick Sharkey. We could be here till 1 o'clock discussing everything today. How are you, gents?
Good. I guess the only thing that's against what Bowman said was the Everest didn't exist when he was growing up. So.
But that was that's the beauty of it.
It's history.
One's a baby and one has got the history.
Yeah. It was good. It was good at Côte d'Azur on Saturday. It was
Côte d'Azur.
unit 1 of 15.
For those who don't understand.
I don't own Côte d'Azur.
The Bayside bubble where we broadcast the spring ticket from.
But it was good watching it all unfold, wasn't it? I mean, yeah, I was trying to think when we was between the 10 to 12 and then the digital stuff that we were doing was just that sense of anticipation you get as you get closer. There's so much at stake, isn't there? Like, I remember when we were building up to the first race thinking, God, I hope Russian Camelot wins because we want this story to continue. And, gee, we want Rothfire to win because we want that to continue. It's a strap-yourself-in day Saturday, isn't it, Shark?
Well, it's in the traditional story of the spring, it's kind of like moving day, isn't it? Because the footy grand finals are usually on. Footy says goodbye. And racing takes over. Mm. Obviously, a different scenario this year with the football codes and everything else and COVID. But it still had that feel to it.
Yeah.
It still had that feel to it. We see, you know, an emerging wait for age star that's still working out what the game is all about, going with his second group one.
Mm.
We see a brilliantly fast horse on Friday night, just remind us the sort of quality sprinters that Australian...
And a flash-looking three-year-old.
Oh, yeah, very flash. Hey, how good did he look pre-race?
In his coat.
In the mounting yard, you did not want to back any other horse
than
Glenn
Fittick. It's like he was bouncing out on the track. He was literally bouncing Glenn Fittick. So that's part of what we're looking forward to, isn't it, come Cox Plate?
And the two horses that you mentioned, you couldn't get a greater, juxtaposition of Russian Camelot and then what happened with Rothfire, the devastation and the heartbreak. He's out for 12 months, listening to Robert Heathcote, and he says there's a chance he may not come back. He's a gelding. Now, he's fractured a sesamoid, so for a speed horse like him, you know, that takes time and recovery, and he may never come back as well.
Well, that's it, Shark, isn't it? You'd probably know a bit more about this. This is the end of the Rothfire story because he won't come back as good. The momentum's gone, the injuries happen, so this little story will be different if he does make a comeback. He might etch out a win or two, but it's hard to see him.
It is a real shame. I think Australian racing... Yeah, he is, and much like his predecessor in that camp, Buffering. Australian racing is at its best when there are elite horses from different states, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you've got that bit of state of origin that you follow them through different carnivals. There's different faces. There's different connections. It's not just the Melbourne-Sydney-centric storyline week in, week out. And Rothfire was going to bring that to the spring carnival. So, yeah, it's desperately frustrating for the Heathcote team. But, look, they've still got a horse. They've still got a chance. And that's the main thing.
And the Queenslanders have still got the blood, alligator blood. And as you touched on, I never thought about it like that. This is as... well represented state by state as Australian racing has ever been. We've got this wave of Western Australians. We've got Betty back in form.
Yeah, the journey on Friday night was brilliant.
We've got the blood still there from Queensland. It's, and the South Australian, I was talking to David Jolly the other day about how proud he is that, not just himself, he said, I wouldn't care if it was me or someone else who had Behemoth.
Yeah.
The fact that we've got two Everest runners, we've got Philip Stokes carving it up. It was like the old Semaphore Beach days of Colin Hayes and Bart Cummings and John Hawkes when John Hawkes was younger and less confident about his capabilities, perhaps, Michael.
When was that?
As we heard on that interview the other day.
It's been a racing journo's wet dream so far this spring.
I probably wouldn't have described it that way.
Oh,
but,
maybe not. I'm still in Friday night mode with Gator.
Yes.
Well, it was outstanding radio, the Friday night edition of the Spring Ticket. We learned a lot about your hippie abode and David Gately.
Someone pointed out a lava lamp in the background.
Of one pot screamer, David Gately.
Oh, David. Yeah, that is 100% true. He literally had a small glass of wine, and he had the giggles up.
He had one more glass of wine, he would have ordered 50 pizzas for Fellgate's front door. He was going to get naughty and mischievous, wasn't he?
He drove the car around, and Juzzy was nearly have to drive him home. He was, he's an interesting cat.
Speaking of getting giddy, SMSs are flying in. Make sure you, we'll try and get to as many as we can, 041 650 5092. SMS, is Matt getting giddy about his love child's chances in the Cox Plate, which is, of course, Russian Camelot? We're about to have a chat to senior part owner John Wheeler, but he did what he had to do on Saturday, Russian Camelot. Mm. The hype, the expectation.
Yeah, we still need to see how he goes against Fair Dinkum Horses, don't we? I mean,
other than the three-year-olds and the internationals, we're not going to see till Cox Plate Day. That's all we have.
Yeah, and that's surprise baby again, you know, those sort of horses.
I don't think he's going Cox Plate.
But that's the storyline. It's a great year for him to be learning against those weight freight horses, because the weight freight horses aren't great. And
8-year-old Humidor raced out of his skin.
It was like the barbershop scene from Coming to America. You know, Joe Lewis was 195 years old. You know, it's kind of like that.
I think the fact that Galo Shop, Trap for Fools was another one who ran out of his skin. The fact that Galo Shop, I mean, I love Russian Camelot, don't get me wrong, but he still has to keep climbing, I think. Galo Shop sat...
He does have to keep climbing. You're
three lengths off him at the 600, and for put it this way, in the space of 600 metres, Russian Camelot only put two lengths on Galo Shop. So, you know, make of that what you will. But
isn't that the story with Russian Camelot? It's that he's not, so you think, in his second Cox Plate here and now. He is still developing, and that's the interest. Can he develop and progress quick enough before a Cox Plate, you know, before we see Aspetar, Armory, like pretty solid international horses without being superstars, come over and test him, you know, goes around Moonee Valley. All the little quirks that the Cox Plate presents every year to any horse that goes there, that's the fascinating bit for me. Can this horse elevate quick enough to get to that race and really stand up and land the one that they all want to win?
Exactly. And the whole thing about him, which I love as well, is the exotic story of Russian Camelot. I mean, O'Brien... You know, this whole idea that he's trying to keep a lid on this megastar.
Well, he didn't on Saturday. He took the lid off when he declared he's the best horse I've ever had anything to do with.
Well, he would be, though, wouldn't he? You know.
He's won a Melbourne Cup.
Yeah, I know, but this is a cockpit.
This is the way Vowel Declare, all due respect to Vowel Declare.
You think of all the other horses he's had, this horse is automatically
Master O'Reilly.
Star witness.
Yeah, okay, but... Now I've forgotten what I was going to say because you threw that.
Well, how about we bring in the owner then, who's got a very good feel on all of this. John Wheeler, part owner of Russian Camelot, joins us. John, congratulations. Do you agree with Sharky and Matt that it was good and he did what he had to do on Saturday, but he's still got a fair way to go?
Good morning, gents. You know, you just deflated my balloon. I was sitting here thinking I had a decent horse. But look, you are partially right, and I think Danny and both Damien have also acknowledged that he's still coming along. But if he can keep coming along the way he is, then I'd retain my confidence. And I think if you look back, I wasn't as confident to start punting on him at $1.60 and $1.55. But there was a lot of the market out there believed he was that good. I'd love to see the makeup of that punting profile, but it can't just have been the $10 each way fellows that brought him in that far, I don't think.
He got slammed in late, didn't he, John? I think what we're saying is we're still discovering what he can do, and so is he, because of the Northern Hemisphere back mark of being 6 months behind. He's still being moulded, isn't he, rushing Camelot? What we're seeing now isn't where it ends, is it?
No, look, that's true. And look, we'd acknowledge that he went into the barriers well on Saturday, had a little dance, but jumped very well with them, and he has done that before. Once he gets some racing miles under his legs, and probably not having crowds there helps that. But, yeah, he's still learning, and I think at least the thing that I noted was both the barriers and at the finish, he didn't lollygag like he did when Dallasan and Fierce Impact went past him last start, when he'd hit the front probably too early, but, you know, that happened. But he finished the race off and didn't lollygag once he did get to the front. That's something I've been looking for, because without that killer, you won't have a vow and declare moment.
John, the other thing that I think punters were really happy to see on Saturday, and it sort of draws from his last preparation at that race at Pakenham when he sat a bit closer to the speed, he's got some adaptability in terms of where he can land in running. And when you get to a track like Moonee Valley and the tight contours there, if you can sit in the first half of the field, it's a massive advantage, isn't it?
Look, it is, and the Moonee Valley is a sort of a happy hunting ground for me. I had a horse that was very good there many years ago. But if you know Danny, you know that he's a very intelligent man and thinks ahead. In this preparation, Camelot's already had two gallops on the course proper and came round the bend like a greyhound. So he can run that way. Obviously, he's a big strider. He's got a beautiful stride, but he is a big strider, and it'll be interesting to see how Ollie decides. In terms of the start and using his pace, which he has got, Ollie hasn't ridden the 120 Group 1 because he doesn't know what to do and that he can't improvise. And I thought he pulled the right chords all through that race on Saturday and won comfortably.
So, John, Cox Plate, my name, he wins that, all going well. Do we see him in a Melbourne Cup?
He will be in the Melbourne Cup, only won't be in the Melbourne Cup if he's injured or, you know, tuckers out, because he's still maturing. But he's getting very close to being at that age where we can't use youth as an excuse. And we want to race against the elite horses. We want to test him. It's like playing the VFL or the AFL. Let's have a look how we go against the really good horses, and we really know what we've got. And I think it's exciting for the public and exciting for racing generally. And we all know how we're disappointed with what happened to Rockfire on the weekend. So,
no, it's great that you... Danny's very much the same. There's no blinkers when it comes to Danny. Even wanted to run him in the English Derby this year. So it's great that you're going to take us on this world tour, hopefully. John, all of our eyebrows raised when you said you once had a great Valley horse a few years ago. What was that horse?
That was a horse called King Lap. And everyone cries about Tom Melbourne having 16 seconds. Mine had 17. four King Lap. 17 seconds. And won the Moonee Valley, second in the Grand National, beat all the horses of his time, but just loved that second position.
Hey, John, what's the international interest been like? Coolmore and other great conglomerates starting to circle about purchasing a share in your boy?
Look, we've taken the view, and I think Danny's very sensible and level-headed about this. We've got enough to worry about for the next three or four races. And we've said that we will look at it with the partners, with my other partners, and Danny and Ollie at the end of this spring preparation, which I expect to be on the 3rd of November, not Cox Plate Day. And as it's my 71st birthday on the 3rd of November, you can imagine that I'll need wild horses not to be running.
Birthday on Melbourne Cup Day. It's got a great symmetry with Russian Camelot, who is the favourite for the Lexus Melbourne Cup. And then next year, the Ark.
Well, that's... Danny and I talk about it. He immediately counters with the second Cox Plate. Look, the Ark is my dream, and as I said, I haven't canvassed that other than with journalists about the Ark. But if you think about it, the horse was up to it. He would still be racing the best European 3 year olds to get a good weight advantage in that race, but. Wouldn't it be terrific to have a horse who's trained here in Australia do well at that race? That's my dream, and let me say I wouldn't be disappointed if it was a second Cox Plate. So.
Well, it's exciting. What's exciting is that the Cox Plate into the Melbourne Cup is on, and then who knows, maybe a European adventure next year. John, congratulations.
Thank you, gentlemen. Enjoy the day.
I'll tell you, I remember there was a lot of frustration when the Hawks has had Octagonal and Lonro, and they never even thought about Hong Kong. They were very localised in their thinking, but never really wanted to travel too much. He had a couple of Japan Cup bids and that, but as much as part of me thinks, oh, love to be conservative with this horse, you know, and weigh up the options of a few of the big races, it's so much better when you've got an owner who wants to conquer the world and a trainer who's prepared to go along with it. And there's no red light for Danny O'Brien.
How exciting is that, though? Like, we've got... He's guaranteed him right now, this morning, on Racing Pulse, that he is going to the Melbourne Cup,
barring
injury or a below-par performance.
Or if he's come to the end of his campaign.
Well, that's a below-par performance.
Which is possible. Don't rule that
out. He's 71 years of age on Melbourne Cup Day. He'll be there if the horse is ready to have the favourite in the Melbourne Cup.
Got to win his first Cox Plate before his second Cox Plate, though.
True that.
He might be better suited in a Melbourne Cup. He might be a better 3,200-metre horse than around the valley over 2,000. But him v. Surprise Baby v. the International Shark. There's an SMS coming through here. Sharky, our international man of mystery. Are you still confident about the Baby with the opposition and the strength of this year's Melbourne Cup?
Yeah, I am. But I think the other O'Brien camp, the Aidan O'Brien camp, I think they've been very, very clever with those 2 3-year-olds that they've placed in the race. I think they've probably identified that they need to get handicap relief from Surprise Baby, having seen him last year, and that 2 high-class 3-year-olds are probably the only way to do that.
The only thing, look, we're always saying that we are as good as anywhere. Our horses are as good as anyone's. We always keep sort of boasting about that.
Wow.
And someone saw to a mate last night, and he was going, "Oh no, these Cox Plate internationals. Oh no, they're going to be hard to beat." Well, one of them. Albeit did get beaten 2 lengths by Magical and Gayarth in the Irish National Stakes, but he went around at 66-1. So he was a sort of a fluky, managed to finish close up to the 2 good horses. And Aspitar, if you look at his form, he's got nice form, but he's not an absolute A-grader. So if we believe in Russian Camelot...
That's good enough to be competitive this year.
Okay, but if we think Russian Camelot is the next Say You Think, then doesn't that mean... And if we think our horses can hold their own in the world stage, we shouldn't be scared in any way of those horses, should we? If we think that our form is as good as anyone's.
That's why this year's Melbourne Cup is so exciting.
I'm talking about the Cox Plate.
Well, the Cox Plate, well, Armory, but he's still a 3-year-old European time as well. So you don't get to see many 3-year-olds from European. Was Adelaide a 3-year-old Northern Hemisphere when he won the Cox Plate?
Yeah.
So there's not many of the 3-year-olds that contest in the Cox Plate. Like he's, I think Rod from Strathmore just put out a text saying he turns 3 years and 6 months of age tomorrow. So he's got the improvement still ahead of him, surely. Other SMSs coming through here, just on that too. Kieran McAvoy's been confirmed as a rider for Tiger Moth. That's a pretty nice
very
pairing.
Very good booking.
And what about
Johnny Allen?
What a huge opportunity for Johnny Allen on Santiago.
Irish jockey, Irish trainer.
Glenn Boss on Skywood as well, heading down here. And, of course, Hugh Bowman's made the decision to spend the entirety of the Spring Carnival here, and he'll be on Anthony Van Dyke in the Caulfield Cup, keeping his options.
That is a very good booking.
In the Melbourne Cup. You're a Van Dyke man, aren't you?
I'm warming up to the Van Dyke. Yes, I am. top weights in Caulfield Cup. A very good record. Yes, and he is a Derby-winning conqueror of Stradivarius.
He almost seems well in.
Yes, he does.
Don't you think?
Yes, and the more... Look, we're only 3 weeks out from the Caulfield Cup.
It's $13.
When you look at the likely field, I don't know if the connections of Anthony Van Dyke would be overly concerned about what they're running into here.
The others had had a spin around here a few times before, hadn't they? Like Dunedin, those sort of horses.
Yeah, I'm not...
I don't know if I'm real worried about
him seeing Caulfield for the first time.
Well, no, he does seem well in to me.
So you're not overly concerned with a very elegant, an Order of the Garter, a Master of Wine. The Turnbull set up.
Master of Wine's not in the field yet.
I think he'll probably sneak in, won't he?
You
don't think he will?
I don't know if I want to be playing that game at the moment. I think now that it seems Anthony Van Dyke is definitely coming, you just look at his record compared to the record of the others. I think Very Elegant is clearly the best of the locals, but where to from there?
Are you, if you talk to Danny O'Brien, I reckon you'll find that there's a massive expectation on Vision, Vow and Declare and the Turnbull, that he's just going to bang, back in the game.
There's a couple of trainers that have got expectations about the Turnbull runners this weekend.
I wasn't expecting Vow and Declare to run in a Caulfield Cup. Has Danny mentioned that before?
Yeah, he's running in Caulfield and Melbourne Cup.
He is running Caulfield.
Well, yeah, you kind of have to, don't you? Because Ollie, it's his distance run.
Ollie just said that he has first dibs on Vow and Declare after he runs in the Turnbull in a possible Caulfield Cup ride. Before we take a break, I was ecstatic with the run of Humidor. Now, could he be a blowout Cox Plate chance?
Yes.
We know Mooney Valley's his best track.
He's back in form, and he's been there and has run well before. Could it be a Fields of Omar-like story? And not that he's won one before, but he's been to the dance a few times and hasn't gone too badly.
And El Segundo was a repeater who ran well. And some bloke was saying, Dean Lester was saying, some bloke said, oh, I got $51 the place, Humidor, and I got a ticket.
Jeez, sorry?
I'd hang on to that.
$51 the place?
Yeah, that would have been at around the time of him collapsing in Perth a couple of times.
Holy, well played, sir.
Yeah, he just has to go around and keep doing what he's doing to be in the frame.
Yeah, that's
he?
Right.
To quote the Hong Kong people.
Morning, boys. Do you think Russian Camelot's got one of the best galloping actions of all time?
That's he's got a very smooth action.
In Deniliquin.
Yeah, he's got a lovely action.
You know who's got the worst action I've ever seen?
Subpoenaed.
Yeah.
Like a jackrabbit.
Yep. He's a beautiful horse, Russian Camelot, but he's just got to start beating good horses by big margins.
Gee, this is interesting because you were his number one fan, and now it sounds like you're almost, I've got him to the dance now. I want to look at some other partners.
Looking over his shoulder, yes. Doing that one where you don't really look at them and you look at the one coming in. No, I think he's a wonderful horse, but now he has to... It's a tough game at the top, Michael. You got to keep rising and improving, and he now has to beat good... It's the old Mac Presnell saying, the definition of most good horses is the margin they can beat good horses by, and Russian Camelot didn't beat, in real terms now, didn't beat good horses last Saturday and didn't beat them by a street.
Katie Queen, is she Gonski's? It was an honest run, but she's not the star we thought she was.
I don't know if that was the best part of the track to be in, to be
fair. Well, Dean Lester was pretty strong on the spring ticket, saying that it was a strange tactic when everyone else had been getting off the fence.
Understatement, I would assume. Yeah, look.
She can't win a Cox Plate, though.
Why can't she?
You think she can turn that around?
I think they should go backwards.
She's still building. She was all right. But if they want a Group 1, they'd probably sharpen up and go to that mile race because she'd be winning that, you would think.
A lot of them...
Big track, Flemington.
A lot of them are high-class horses at that level, like Kingsville Dream and a few others. They float through on class and run well, but they don't still have that sort of killer instinct. And I remember, I think we spoke to Willie Pike after the Kingston Town Classic a couple of years ago, and, she's rated better than Winx on that performance.
She had a lot of hoof issues.
Yeah, and he said, I also just want to see her come back as a four-year-old and pick it all up again. So I think she's going really well, but I just don't think she's what she was as a three-year-old.
Yeah,
we'll talk about the Caulfield Guineas after the break with Ole Kirk and the Melbourne edition, but can anything, you're going to say personal, can anything beat Instant Celebrity in the 1,000
Yes, of course.
Games?
She's not, I heard that after the race, watching 7 or .com, one of the two, and then, there's your 1,000 Guineas winner, and she's unbeaten. Unbeatable. She won by 3/4 of a length. It was a nice win, but personal second up. It's been set for one race. I maintain, I've said it every week on multiple shows on this.
This will be your greatest moment if personal beats her in the
100%. She can beat her. Keep backing her, punters. Just keep going.
What don't you like about Instant Celebrity?
So I don't like anything. She's unbeaten. She's clearly talented. I know that she's giving everyone the feel that she will run a mile.
You don't think she will?
You could question it on pedigree. Her mum looked like she would, and she didn't. Not a single doubt's not exactly a source of, you know, super milers. He's a very, very good stallion, but you would say that his best progeny sort of raced between 1,000 and 1,400 metres. Look, run on horses. They're because they get back and run on, yeah, oh, well, she'll get further, he'll get further. If you watch any race in Australia, the post-race interview for a run-on winner is, well, how far do you think it'll go? Will it get further? Because it gives that impression that it will. Some of them don't. I'm not saying instant celebrity won't, but it's not a fait accompli. Oh, she won that race, therefore she's going to be as good at a mile. I think personal is has far more tactical speed and can beat it.
Well, maybe it's just a dumb default question sometimes as well. Maybe the question itself is the problem, not
it
the
doesn't
truth.
Look a stellar 1,000 guineas from
no,
what they have done so far. It's
no,
an
it
even bunch.
No.
Yeah. Whereas the opposite in the boys.
No,
it's one of the best guineas we've seen in years.
Stonking good race.
Take a little break and then we will come back and discuss that. We'll also have a chat to the owner of Ole Kirk. There was some talk that maybe, because the relation to Black Caviar has got its Group 1, would they U-turn to an Everest instead of
too
a
slow.
Caulfield guineas? We'll ask Neil Ware at that. SMS as we go to the break. And Sharky, condolences from all of us here. There's an SMS here for you. I just lost it here, but it said along the lines of, unfortunately, we lost Lucas Cranick over the weekend, and he was your horse. Condolences to you. Gee, that's such a sad thing, because not just for the animal, but he was, at stud here, and he played a big part for you.
Yeah.
It must be a gutting shark, obviously.
Oh, it was. There were lots of tears on Saturday, not just shed by me, but everyone at Lenever Park, which has become his new home since Malcolm Boyd had retired. And yeah, look, we didn't get to see the best of him on the racetrack when he injured his fetlock, and ultimately that was the cause of his demise on the weekend. He wasn't the best stallion in the world, but anyone that worked with him just fell in love with him. And I think that was the case at the farm on the weekend, just that the team's absolutely distraught, as I'm sure all the connections were, who I spoke to over the weekend. But yeah, lovely horse, just such a kind horse, and a very 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 good racehorse.
Very sad indeed. We'll take a quick break. You're listening to The Verdict. More to come.
The Verdict for OTI Racing,
where sport and lifestyle collide.
Find out more at oti.com.au.
But this is awesome. Back to back, it's all over for Sunline. Look at her go down the straight, 8 lengths in front of Referral and Diatribe. She might be the greatest in the world, Sunline. She streaks home in the Cox Plate. Canters home to the line to win by 6 lengths.
On Bone Crusher responds to the whip, the roars of the crowd. He races up to our Waverley Star. 100 out, Bone Crusher, our Waverley Star. Stride for stride, nothing in it. Our Waverley Star, the rails, Bone Crusher the outside. And Bone Crusher races into Equine Immortality.
It's Weeks in front by a length. Ben Battle's going with her. Weeks 3 corners, Ben Battle. Weeks is staving off Ben Battle. Cometh the hour, cometh the legend. Greatness, Weeks has done it. It's Equine Utopia. 2 legs to Ben Battle, Humidor, then again.
Oh, some of the greatest victories we've seen in the Cox Plate. And we have our Ladbrokes Cox Plate 100 competition launching this morning. It's easy. All you need to do is pick the greatest Cox Plate performance of all time in the 99 runnings so far. You can head to rsn.net.au, put your selection in, and you could win a VIP experience at the Cox Plate in 2021, when we will all be there enjoying the atmosphere. The winner will be announced on Racing Pulse on Friday, October 23. So we will be going through some of the greatest Cox Plate performances in the build-up to this year's running of the 100th Ladbrokes Cox Plate. We've got our Ladbrokes Legend Series, the Cox Plate Legend Series, where we speak to superstars every Wednesday. Oh, gents, I'm going to open up the floor here. Maddie, best Cox Plate performance.
Yeah, so it's not the best horse to win it. It's the best performance to win the Cox Plate.
In your
Plate.
Mind.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what we're talking about. I still think, even though Winks and Sunline got close to Dulcify's margin, I still think raw performance, I still think Dulcify's hard to knock him off the perch as the number one performance, although I will bow to Sunline and Winks.
Kingston Town can't win. That year was
and
pretty
Kingston
good.
And Kingston Town can't win, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So you think it was pretty awesome?
I love Bone Crusher. It's going to be a hard one to choose. Mm. But anyway, get your competition in, rsn.net.au, and we will count down to this year's 100th Cox Plate. We're about to have a chat to Neil Werrett. Before we do that and talk about the three-year-old's nature strip, all eyes were on him this morning. Here's a little bit of audio from his trial.
And they're off. And Nature Strip settled about last out of the gates, but he jumped out okay. Karkadakit and Private Agent are the first two into stride. And Nature Strip being hard held towards the rear end of the field. Private Agent and Karkadakit, they go head and head here from Secretly Awesome, famous running on. Then he's a hot shot, but it's Karkadakit being patiently ridden up front. And Karkadakit will just be Private Agent, famous third. Then he's a hot shot, Secretly Awesome. And Nature Strip really bolting there at the end. They're followed then by Tommy
Gold. He was under a stranglehold from J-Mac, but I tell you what, he was messy out of the gates.
I don't know
whether it didn't look good out of the gates.
Is it encouraging in that he's relaxed, or is it discouraging
almost,
in that
almost dipped, and then he jumped second, third, last, so he got through, but I wouldn't be overly enamoured with that jump out.
The old TV news scandalous journo coming in. Comes out of him every now and then, doesn't
he? Did he jump well to your eye,
Sharky? Well, he's got a race on Saturday, doesn't he?
But you can still...
What's he there to do? Ping the gates and lead out by six?
When you're there to try to the satisfaction, you want to jump nicely.
That was satisfactory, wasn't it?
Was it?
Well, stewards deemed it to be.
It is to the stewards,
but... Well, that's all that matters.
Will you take $1.50 in the premiere on him on Saturday?
I don't have enough money to make a quid out of $1.50.
I know Libertini's in it and Classic Legend is. I'm just wondering if there's Eduardo's and others. If he does that again on Saturday, he's going to be in a position that he's not familiar with.
It's interesting. So. This Everest is starting to fall away. We know the top end is there, but we lost Rothfire on the weekend. There'll be a few slot holders who might be a little bit nervous about who they are going to throw in now, because the top end is there, but how much depth is there going to be in this year's Everest? And it just so happens that the part owner of Ole Kirk, who's got a big smile on his face after the win in the Golden Rose on Saturday, Neil Werrett, has one of those empty slots in the Everest. Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. Very good, thank you.
Congratulations with Ole Kirk. Close relation to Black Caviar winning. How much is he worth now, Neil?
Oh, I have no idea, to be honest. We'll wait to the end of the year and find out.
So what's the... you've got a slot for the Everest. What are you... is it got Ole Kirk's name written all over it? What's your position with the Everest at the moment?
Good question. I'd had a couple of conversations prior to Saturday with the Hawks team, but they're very much settling on the Guineas, I think everyone, the team's happy to go Guineas way. But I hear Wayne said yesterday that they might be interested in the Everest, which was a surprise to me. But I spoke to Michael late. The horse was pulled up well. He had the chiropractor over him, he's in good shape, because it was a pretty hard track on Saturday. So I think everyone was worried the horses might have jarred up or, you know, pulled up a bit sore. But from what Michael told me yesterday afternoon, everything's good to go. So I'm going to leave it up to Michael and John and Wayne to sort out where they want to go.
Neil, even though he was a stakes-winning two-year-old, he always looked like the sort of horse that was going to improve with age. It must be really satisfying to see him come out third up and get his group one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're a little bit stiff in the sires in Melbourne, and then we're stiff in the sires in Sydney. So, and then he got a couple of really wet tracks too that didn't help, but... although he can run on the wet, he's probably better on the fast paces. The last two runs have been his best, and he's maturing, as you said, Mick. He's getting... his grand final was always going to be Caulfield Guineas Day, so to win the Golden Rose on the way through was the exciting bit. So all the owners are very thrilled about it, and... you know, it's an exciting prospect to have.
Just on the Everest in your slot and the history of the Everest and lessons learned, grabbing a slot, attributing a slot to a horse early can be very perilous, can't it? Everything can change. The form can change. They can lose form or you can get a Rothfire situation. What are your options now?
Well, I think everyone's talking about the same five or six horses. I mean, the first year we were fairly confident with Vega Magic and early, and we went in early and had a number of discussions with David Hayes about Vega, and he was very bullish on it, as David can be, and we stepped into him early, and it was from our point of view, a good choice. It was a bit unlucky not to have won, but it was a good result. If you don't get when you don't get Nature Strip first up, we can't compete with some of the corporates because the corporates offer different advantages to what the team, Max and Colin and Steve and myself, because they offer, hospitality, Star Casino can offer certain things that we can't offer. So it makes it difficult to compete up early with some of the big boys. But I think you're just going to be selective, and we still think there's one or two possibilities. I mean, depending on what happens, we're still talking to, four or five of the owners at present to try and get, either options on horses until after Saturday or to try and land a horse.
What about the horse you beat, North Pacific? Has he won?
Well, I don't think... I don't know what... he's not won at present because I don't think they want to go that way.
So, well... it's going to be an interesting few weeks to see what happens with those three-year-olds in regards to the Everest, but it's good to hear that it looks like the Guineas is on Ole Kirk's menu, because it is going to be one of the all-time great Guineas, and he is up to it in his ears after that performance on Saturday, Neil. So congratulations, another big race win, another high-priced stallion.
Thanks, guys.
Neil Werrett joining us there. I'm happy to hear that they are going to go to the Caulfield Guineas. The first three place getters, King's Legacy was big, North Pacific was big, Mowoonga, and I forgot to ask Ollie, I think Bruce Clark's tweeted out, he is going to be riding Mowoonga, the favourite in the Caulfield Guineas. Glenfiddich, this is a hot, hot Caulfield Guineas.
It's a very strong Caulfield Guineas, and the form sort of ties in a bit with Glenfiddich, Ollie Kirk, King's Legacy, through that Champagne.
Tagaloa
as well. Interesting to see the news out of the Danny O'Brien camp this week regarding Flying Award.
Well, surely he can't go there now.
Why?
He was disgraceful, and there's probably
an issue. Well, he may have choked down.
Yeah, well, and he's pulled up a bit rough. So there was a report yesterday he hasn't pulled up well.
Well, that's the question.
It would be the best return since Glastonbury winning the Metrop if Flying Award came out and
still
won the Caulfield Guineas.
But you're right about the Everest tail. I mean, what do you do if you're Neil Werrett and you're sitting there and all the big horses are gone, the other ones are injured? What's the value of your slot?
I think Santa Ana Lane, Trekking...
But none of those horses can...
I'm not sure who else you'd want to entertain.
But you have to pin it to something, I suppose. But do you want to pin it to something that you've got no faith in whatsoever?
Yeah.
It's a weird one. Anyway.
He would be the wrong horse for the Everest, Ole Kirk. I think it was pretty clear post-race, the way they were speaking of it.
Unnatural preparation too, wouldn't it?
And I flippantly said, he's too slow before I'm going to text saying he's just won a Group 1. I don't mean he's too slow as in he's a slow horse, but you're talking about a high-pressure 1,200-metre race. It's probably not... All the talk, I think, is he's ready for 14, but he wants a mile. Why would you then go back to 12? He's going to be outpaced in that race.
Well, the little problem with the Everest is it yanks people away from what they normally do. But what do you do in an Everest? This is the first year we've come up for it where you've got a slot, you've paid for it, costs you a lot of money... And all you've got left is horses that you know can't run on the top half of the field. What happens then?
You're going to lose your money.
Yeah, it's an awkward dilemma.
Absolutely. It'll be fascinating to see how it transpires. But it's also changed in dynamic now with Rothfire out, because this immense speed battle that was going to take on Nature Strip may not occur.
Well, Farnan won't be there, will he, either?
Yeah, he's been locked in.
Yeah, he's there.
Been okay. Locked in. Yeah. I suppose Godolphin's got Bivouac as well in the mix. SMS Black Caviar would still win the Everest. I don't disagree with that.
I agree with that.
Of course Black Caviar would win the Everest.
Buckhurst with 55. No, I think right now if you pulled her out of the...
Oh, sorry.
Buckhurst with 55 in the Caulfield Cup. Shark?
Someone's been reading my futures bets.
Sharky, what did you think of Saracen Knight, the performance? More to the point, what did you think of the rides in that race?
Saracen Knight was a really good win. I am not entertaining him for any of the majors at this point. He's had a long time off the scene. Danny O'Brien's done a great job to get him back and get him winning so soon in the prep. I think the pace in that race probably helped bring him into the race.
And it was visually flash, but they were coming back as much as he was surging forward.
Yeah. It was a nice win. I'm not charging to back him in a Group 1 anytime soon, but Buckhurst, on the other hand...
You're keen on Buckhurst as well. So Anthony van Dyck and Buckhurst.
I think they're the two.
It was interesting, Moody's comments about the swarm of Sydney jocks on Saturday morning. He was very...
Well, I'll play a little snippet. This is what Moody had to say about the Sydney siders who are now allowed to compete in the Spring Carnival.
I feel sorry for our local riders. I think they're the ones that have done the right thing. They've been a massive part of keeping racing going by their conduct, the way they've handled things. And then the big races come along and then we seem to be opening the doors for every other bastard to come in and eat off their plate. If I was one of them, I'd be dirty on the world this morning waking up and reading that. I think we've got a terrific group of riders and they deserve their chance. None of our boys are able to go up and ride in the Everest or a race like that worth $14 million, but we're throwing the gates open and letting those buggers come down here.
Are your thoughts?
Yeah, I had a good chat to Matty Highland about it. And Moody's right in a sense if you want to keep playing this game of tit-for-tat with New South Wales. If you want to keep saying, well, they didn't do this and we let... But someone has to be bigger. And the Spring Carnival's bigger than the tit-for-tat. And for those, you know, the fans of the Spring Carnival, whether they're in Melbourne or Sydney, they want to see Bowman and that here. So there's an argument here beyond the border issue, and that is whether we can make the Spring Carnival as good as it possibly can be for the audience, and then the wagering and all those things that come as an advantage that's beyond the border dispute. So I understand Peter's sentiment. But I also think that the Spring Carnivals, and someone has to be the bigger... If New South Wales want to play these little silly games, and I like the fact that Victoria's risen above it, to say, no, the integrity of the carnival's bigger than a spat. So let's make it as good as it possibly can.
If a jockey's good enough, it doesn't matter where he or she is from, what state they're based in, they're going to get good rides. If they're elite, they will get elite rides. I don't see why the argument should be, someone in the second or third tier is going to get a chance to ride in the Melbourne Cup. Oh, no, Sydney jockeys are coming, they're not going to get that chance. If that jockey's good enough, they'll get the chance.
Unless it's really hard to get here, which is what Peter's saying. It's very hard for our jockeys to get to New South Wales, but we've made it very easy for them to get
here. I don't understand that in this most unusual of years, the situation, the scenario has changed so frequently. If they can I want to see Hugh Bowman riding in Melbourne. I think it's great.
Absolutely.
It's fantastic.
Sarah McAvoy, Glenn Boss.
I'm just bummed I won't be able to be there.
I did have a bit of a laugh about Hugh Bowman's comment. And Hugh Bowman's just been honest. He's a laconic country boy. In an article that Chris Roots wrote, his grab was, I didn't grow up wanting to win an Everest. I did grow up wanting to win a Melbourne Cup. He's decided to handball bivouac, come down to ride Anthony van Dyck. He's got King's Legacy in the Caulfield Guineas, other good rides as well. So... And, of course, that's caused... I tweeted it out to have a bit of fun with the New South Wales Twitter followers, and they've grabbed onto the hook because taking it Sydney v Melbourne.
Don't underestimate King's Legacy.
Do you think would feel about Hugh Bowman saying that?
Well, I think he's weighted up pound for pound, Bowman. He said, I have better opportunities in Melbourne than I do in Sydney. Like, Bivouac's a fringe dweller in Everest. Anthony van Dyck, we've just been talking about how he's probably the best weighted horse in the Caulfield Cup.
And ultimately... What does it matter what Peter Volandis thinks of what Hugh Bowman's going to do? Hugh Bowman's not employed by Peter Volandis. Hugh Bowman can go ride wherever he wants. If Hugh Bowman says, you know what, it's been a dream of mine to win the Barbados Cup, I'm relocating to Barbados, so be it. Well, he can do whatever he wants.
It's just good fun to stir the pot.
Oh, you hey, love you speaking, froth on it. That's speaking, your problem. You love this.
I just can't believe some people on Twitter. Hey, speaking of jockeys, we had Dwayne Dunn on the spring ticket, which we're loving doing. Download the app, have a listen to us on every Saturday. Dwayne Dunn, James Winks, giving unbelievable insights. But he also revealed the news that he's going to be a bit longer on the sidelines, unfortunately, than what he had first thought.
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of those, I asked the surgeon what we're at, and he said, I wouldn't be confident to let you back on a horse within 3 months. Just that, not doesn't have to be at speed. It could be any fall at all that could displace that fracture. So we just got to let it heal naturally.
So this is a long time on the sidelines for Dwayne, because he said that's 3 months before he can even think about getting back on a horse, depending on how it heals. No surgery. And it's a crossroads moment, really, for Dwayne, who's had such a established and esteemed career.
I remember interviewing him 4 or 5 years ago, and he was thinking of calling it quits because things weren't going, you know, he wasn't getting the rides that he was accustomed to and all that. So I'd say, without knowing, I'd say he's probably 70-30 70 against.
Well, it all depends on how it heals. Mm. If in 3 months' time they go to the doctor and say it's going to be a bit longer, you know, it's almost the similar situation to what Corey Brown's in at the moment.
He's a very... I'll tell you what he is. He can transition nicely because he's a very good media performer.
He's very good.
So is James.
James Winks is great analysts. Too. I was... You know, I know James had many conversations with him over the last decade, and working with him on Friday night, his insight was brilliant. It really was, particularly as the valley, as that track started to unfold and they got off the fence, they started... The way he was sort of seeing the races and looking at how a jock might try and get an advantage if they couldn't get to that right part of the track, you know, that's the stuff
it's
you want to hear.
One thing racing's coverage has lacked in recent times is the analysis from those involved in the
Well, they're the players. Yeah. They're the guy. But the AFL commentary teams are full of ex-players.
I think the analysis,
why don't we have more ex-jockeys?
I think the analysis at the moment is really pushing towards a niche kind of area, but it's become the mainstream, and that is the... You know, the benchmarky this and above and below and the data and the this and the information and all that discussion that they have is, I think it's quite alienating to the average punter, not that type of punter. So I think when you get the jockeys coming in, everyone goes, wow, this bloke sat there at 60 k's an hour on a 500 kilo.
But that's
then
exciting.
Then I'm interested in what they say. I'm not necessarily interested in a conga line of people telling me about the
numbers and... The stats and the sectionals are all part of it. It's part of it, but I want to know how you'd win the race, how the game's going to be played, where you'd be. Same as any sport, you want to hear about how it's going to unfold in a real sense that you can watch. We're not sitting there watching a clock spin around.
Yeah.
You know, we're watching horses and jockeys vying for position and pushing and shoving and this and that. How's that going to go down? That's
totally...
That's exciting.
A couple of quick ones before we finish, boys. I want to get to a few SMSs. Contrail, is it the best horse in the world?
I haven't seen this horse tested yet.
7 from 7 in Japan.
He's so laconic. He just strides away from them. It looks like he's doing it in first gear. He may well be doing it in first gear. Is this the horse that goes to Europe next year and tries to give them their first arc? You know, they're so desperate to win that race. Maybe this is the perfect horse.
If you're the best horse in Japan, in all likelihood, you're the best horse in the world.
Wow, it is phenomenal to watch. RSN, we tweeted it out. Jump on and have a look at it. The ease of that win. And the other big international news, the Celebration Cup of Hong Kong yesterday, Golden 60. I think he's now 11 from 12, defeating Beauty Generations first start for David Hayes.
He's won 11 from 12, this horse. And he won, you know, he's fresh up. He won well enough to be a star of the world stage, didn't he? Because Beauty, I think David Hayes has somehow managed to get Beauty Generation back to some sort of... Because he paraded amazingly, Beauty Generation, behind the gates. I thought, wow, you've got him back. He looks amazing, this horse. So.
And on the flip side, everyone wanted to tell you in the lead-up to that race yesterday that Golden 60 was underdone. And he was too short in the market based on his physical appearance. Well, if that's Golden 60 underdone, what's he going to do to them this season as he gets fitter?
Yeah, absolutely. SMS is coming in. I think Moody is right, but Victoria needs to be morally better and allow anyone who wants to compete here. Another one here saying, I can't stand the negativity around Sydney jockeys coming. They won't pinch too many rides on Melbourne horses. We'll mainly only ride Sydney horses. That's from Rod in Strathmore. Another SMS coming through here in regards, but a lot of SMSs about Russian Camelot. He looked pretty good to me on Friday. Shark, don't pot him again. That's from John in Shepparton.
What if I potted him? John in Shepparton, and anyone else who wants to text
hang on, he's a big fella, John in Shepparton.
Yeah, bring it on, John. Bring some Art Mona tomatoes down when you do as well. Look, I'm not potting him. You're allowed to say that the horse is developing. This thing that we all have to be gushing over every horse that shows a skerrick of ability, you can have an opinion that says, you know what, he's a nice horse, but I want to see him develop a little bit more. We're all bet on different horses, John. Just chill, brother.
Another one here saying, Sharky, I don't think personal's a good thing to run 1,600.
Yeah, I'll take you on that.
All right. Another one here saying that I think Mystic Journey will beat Arcady Queen if they both go to the mile at Flemington.
That becomes a good race now with Mystic Journey back.
I would love to see them take each other on there. Junipal, Turak chance, question mark.
Junipal, it would be some chance. All handicap. Right.
And one here which I do like. Boys, you should podcast this program on Foxtel. Do you think Foxtel would be ready for Matty Stewart the way he is this morning? He's just sauntered in.
I walked in, Felgate goes, did you just roll out of bed? I said, this is just COVID normal. This is me, COVID normal.
Mark Robinson's been on Foxtel for a long time. I think Matty presents better than Mark.
Do you know what? There is a correlation. Although Mark's become a little bit more svelte in recent months, though. So.
Okay. Has he?
I see the drive-bys. It's a long weekend of drive-bys.
Hey, don't forget, if you want to have more fun with Matty Stewart, listen to Spring Ticket every Saturday because he has been good fun for all of us.
More time on the bike, less time on the telescope.
We're going to go for a swim soon.
Are you?
Hey, I may, actually. It's pea soup out there.
Yeah, what a good day.
I've got to do it at some stage.
Hey, Sharky, we will catch up with you during the week, Friday from
Friday. Yes.
Matty Stewart, we'll read all about it.
They don't think I'm beached down there.
Tasmania.
Felgate just smiled.
Thank you for all of your SMSs. Stay with us. We'll have more winners to come after this.